Hello, friends. It's the Environment Show, and welcome. While cutting in Brazil's tropical forests has declined, the destructive effects have increased. From satellite photos, a NASA scientist has seen the Edge effect. Also this time, an 800-number computer service. And the next generation gets ready to lead.
Before putting your all into saving the ozone layer and the oceans and the soil, and it's just got to be a thing that you can't be taught it. You can be, but it doesn't have as much go in you. You got to be born with it.
Some of the stories coming your way this time on The Environment Show, a national production made possible by Hemmings Motor News, the national Bible of the old car hobby, monthly from Bennington, Vermont, and by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York. And this is Bruce Robertson. Not as much of Brazil's tropical forests have been cut as once thought. However, the effect of the cutting that has gone on is far worse than previously thought. The cause of this ironic discrepancy is the Edge effect, says Dr. Compton Tucker, a research biologist and tropical forest expert at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland.
When we talk about edge effects, we're talking about a boundary between the forest and between adjacent areas of deforestation. And in this boundary zone, you have a very different situation with regard to light, with regards to temperature, with regards to humidity. You have, for example, a much greater possibility that wind blowing across the open area, which has been deforested, will cause physical damage, knocking down trees. Many of your tropical trees are not very deep rooted. And then also within this boundary zone, you have a tremendously easier access to the forest by non-forest animals, such as goats, cows, pigs, cats, and especially by humans. And you tend to have in these boundary zones or in these edges a very different population of animals, and especially of larger animals and birds, simply because you have this much easier access or access from non-forest animals into the edge.
Tucker says the edge effect is created by any number of human activities, including, of course, logging, but there are many others.
Actually, any type of deforestation causes an edge effect where you would have the building of a road, for example, or where you would have logging, or where you would have the clearing of an area, which would then be put subsequently into pasture or some type of agricultural activity. And it simply is the edge between where the forest remains and where the recently deforested area starts. You could also have this from pipelines, you could have this from airstrips, you could have this from mining operations, any type of forest disturbance which results in the removal of the trees which were formerly there.
In fact, seeing the edge effect in the aggregate is the importance of the recent research conducted by Tucker. Tucker and University of New Hampshire scientist Dr. David Skoll published results of their studies in a recent edition of the journal Science. Until now, says Tucker, we had not been calculating the edge effect into our assessment of tropical forest damage. And as we said at the beginning, though, there is irony here. More in a moment. To gather his information, Tucker went to a very highly placed source.
David Skoll and our co-workers and I started this work in late 1988, and we first developed some fairly thorough and very efficient satellite-based techniques coupled with ground verification within Brazil, where we could distinguish areas of tropical forest from areas of deforestation. We then used satellite data covering this 2 million square mile or 5 million square kilometer area to then quantify for this large area, which is the entire Amazon basin of Brazil, what the deforestation was and where we had remaining forest, and most importantly, where we had these areas of deforestation and how they were organized in terms of their latitude and longitude. On the basis of this, we were then able to calculate where we had fragments of isolated forest and also to calculate the edge effect.
So from these satellite photos, what emerged was a rather different picture of human activity and its effect in the tropical forest. Most importantly, says Tucker, we now realize we have not been seeing the big picture.
It's important important, if we're talking about effects upon biological diversity, to consider these three components. First, the deforestation per se. Secondly, these forest fragments, which are isolated by deforestation. And thirdly, to focus upon the edge effects from deforested areas into adjacent areas of forest.
As we study the effect of deforestation on the biology of a forest, then, we need to bear in mind where the trees are being cut, in other words, the pattern of cutting, how many trees are being left standing in that pattern, and how that pattern determines the edge effect. Tucker says cutting many small patterns may be more detrimental than cutting fewer but larger patterns.
For example, if you have an area which is 10 miles by 10 miles, which is deforested, and if this occurs in a square area 10 miles by 10 miles, if you have a 1 mile edge effect which extends from the deforested area into the adjacent forest, and you add up the deforestation plus the edge effect, you would have, of course, 100 square miles of deforestation plus 43 miles or 43 square miles of edge effect. If you have the same quantity of deforestation, 100 square miles, which is distributed as 10 strips, each of which are 10 miles long and 1 mile wide, and then were to add up the total deforestation plus this 1 mile of the edge effect, you would have a total affected area of about 350 square miles. So the pattern of deforestation is of paramount importance in determining the actual magnitude of these edge effects.
This scientific analysis is particularly interesting in light of the current debate over logging practices in the Pacific Northwest, where the leading options being considered include either clear cutting, in other words, the larger patterns, or selective cutting, the smaller patterns. With the smaller patterns, more roads are needed, bringing a far greater stress factor to the forest. Tucker says, as strange as it may sound, clear cutting is actually better.
I'm not an advocate of total clear cutting, but simply to say that if you're going to harvest an area, it's extremely important to leave quite a few trees standing within the areas which are harvested. Secondly, to concentrate these areas in large areas and not have them be distributed as a sum of many much smaller areas.
Now for the real shocking revelation emerging from the recent study.
It's quite ironic that in this study that we found two things. The first was the actual rate of deforestation within the Amazon of Brazil was about one-half to one-third what many people had been estimating 3 or 4 years ago for the same time period. If you at the same time consider what the effect of a deforestation is upon the isolation of forest fragments and plus the edge effect, which we've just discussed, this results in about three times the total affected area of the deforestation per se. And when you look at the total biological effect of the edge effects of the deforestation and of the isolation of forest fragments, this number is then fairly similar to what people had formerly assumed was the total rate of deforestation. So it's quite ironic that even though we found this much lower rate of deforestation directly, when you consider these indirect biological effects upon biodiversity, that the total affected area is very similar to previous estimates of deforestation.
Seen from space then, through these satellite photos, actually less of the tropical forest has been cut than previously reported from the ground. And what is more, says Tucker, the Brazilian government has succeeded in slowing the rate of what cutting there is. However, as we have just heard, the impact of that cutting, including now this edge effect, is equal to what we had thought was happening when we thought much more of the forest was being cut. So what was at first good news is now, well, no news. Dr. Compton Tucker, a research biologist with NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. His report, compiled along with Dr. David Scola at the University of New Hampshire, was published in a recent edition of the journal Science. This is Bruce Robertson. For a telephone call to Burlington, Vermont, 800-326-5463.
Good morning, Eagle Line. This is Sharon speaking.
Yes.
How can I help you?
Good morning, Sharon. Looking for Hans Keller, please.
Sure. Can I tell him who's calling?
This is Bruce Robertson.
Just a minute, please.
Thank you. We listened to a little classical music in the background here on hold. This is the number of EcoLine, a new computer service run by an organization called Together Foundation. Hans Keller is the director. See if we can get him here.
EcoLine, good morning. This is Hans Keller, the director of EcoLine speaking. How can I help you?
Yes, hello, Hans. This is Bruce Robertson from The Environment Show. We just heard about your service and wanted to find out some more about it. I guess, first of all, what is this service we're calling?
Perhaps I should give the explanation of what the possibilities are on the line.
Okay.
And so perhaps I should start by explaining why to have the line to start with, and explain that the line is really a parallel product to what's called TogetherNet, which is the electronic networking system. About 90% of the people in the United States don't have access to a personal computer with a modem where they can tap into this type of information. So by nature of those statistics, we are establishing a situation again where some people have access to information, some others don't. And so we have decided to create this 800 line specifically to be very democratic about providing the service that's available and the information that's available out there, to provide that to the regular user that normally would not be able to have instant access to this type of information.
So what's contained in this database on your end?
Okay. In the database, we have about 60,000 records now. And the records are kept by project names, organization names, keywords that describe a project or an organization. We have last names in there, we have cities in there, state, country, etc. So we have this huge database sitting there, and the search can really be based on the various criterias, which are one, keywords. So you can look up something on the atmosphere and come up with either organizations or projects that deal with that specific topic. And we provide you then with the phone number and the address of who you can contact in order to get the information you need.
We understand the database itself, Hans, is based on research and information contained in your new catalog, which is called Who's Who in Service to the Earth. That in itself is an invaluable resource. My question is, how did you assemble that database, which, as we said, serves as the basis for this computer database?
Okay. Over a span of years, when I was starting to recognize that so many wonderful things were happening around the world, I was a businessman. And from being a businessman, I went to North Carolina on almost impulse to build an ecological village. And when I built that ecological village, and, you know, that can be a subject of a completely different discussion, then I realized that people were doing many things around the world, but they didn't know of each other. And I started to accumulate information just to show what was all happening around the world, okay? And that resulted in the first edition of Who is Who in Service to the Earth, which then resulted in the second edition, which you have in your hands. And this second edition now has 8,000 projects and organizations of very basic stuff of what people are doing for a sustainable future.
Yeah, you've been on the air now for only a short while already. What sort of responses have you been getting? What are some of the typical questions from the callers?
Sample of questions on EcoLine. How can I help to save the planet? Said a 9-year-old child, okay? So we input in there in the computer children, and then we find somebody that is having special material available for 9-year-old kids on what they can do specifically. So we told the child that's the number to call. What project does the American Forestry Association have? So we put in there American Forestry Association and say they're working on this and this and that. and here's the number. You can contact them directly. See, you cannot find the American Forestry Association if you don't know where they are. That's the weird thing. With the way our phone system is, unless somebody has an 800 number, you cannot find somebody if you hear about them or a friend tells you about it.
I have one for you, Hans. I sort of already know the answer, but this will sort of test the database. Let's pretend I don't know. I'm looking, Hans, for a man named Wes Jackson.
Okay, he's well known, so let's hope he's on there someplace. Let's find out, Jackson. How do you know Wes Jackson?
Well, I've been reading an article about him, and I wanted to find out more about what his research is all about, and wanted to get in touch with him.
And now, I'm just recognizing. I have about 20 Jackson on there, so. Let's quickly. He's with the Land Institute, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that the other piece of information I have is that he's with the Land Institute. Not sure where it is.
Well, now that's even better. You see, I just put in Jackson. I got now 20 Jackson in front of me, and I just happened to remember that he's with the Land Institute. But I'm going now back to my original screen. I put in Jackson, and under organization, right? I'm going to put Land Institute. Just Land. I don't have to put. So my little screen says now organization Land, last name Jackson, and now I'm hitting search, and it took exactly 2 seconds. It's there now, and it says Wes Jackson Land Institute, here is the address, 2440 East Waterwell Road, Salina, Kansas, zip code USA 913-823-5376. To help transform agriculture in order to protect the long-term ability of the earth to support a variety of life and culture, an educational research organization which conducts research. Then I would say, is that what you're looking for? And you would say, yes, sir, or no, sir. And now I would say, we're keeping track of the callers. Where did you get information about us? Can I input your name? And then we keep you posted of what Ecoline is doing.
Hans Keller, director of Ecoline, a project of Together Foundation, speaking to us from Burlington, Vermont. Together Foundation is a nonprofit organization being run in conjunction with the University of Vermont. Together Foundation disseminates information in three ways: through the catalog, Who's Who in Service to the Earth, TogetherNet, a computer network you may tap into with your own personal computer and modem, and Ecoline, this 800 service where student volunteers operate computers for you to answer your many questions. The number is 1-800-ECO-LINE. This is Bruce Robertson. There is nothing more disappointing than discovering an insect infestation in your flower or vegetable garden, all your hard work planting literally being eaten away. Well, Larry Somke, the environmental gardener, says we don't have to stand by and watch. He says there are several very effective steps we can take. Let's go down to the garden and find out.
Stretch this down, just kind of a light stretching. That's a boy.
Hello, Larry. How are you doing today?
Bruce, hi. Well, we're down here in the garden today. My son, 6-year-old son Henry and I, and we're just covering up some pumpkins that he planted. He and his Cloverbud 4-H group planted 2 hills of pumpkins this year so they can have some pumpkins for Halloween. Pumpkins are the kind of a plant that can attract a lot of bugs. So we want to take a non-chemical approach to keeping those bugs away. Prevention is the best cure for controlling pests in the garden.
So what is this material? It sort of looks almost like gauze.
It is much like gauze. I think it's a polypropylene spun fabric. It's called row cover or floating row cover. It's very easy to find in most garden centers, or a lot of catalogs carry it. And you simply open it up out of the package and just stretch it out and lightly drape it over your young pumpkin plants in this case. And what that will do is provide a barrier. That's why it's called an insect barrier. It'll keep all kinds of moths and caterpillars and nasty bugs away from the pumpkins, so that they don't get in there and lay their eggs and start hatching out all kinds of nasty bugs that will eat your pumpkins.
What about emitting sunlight and rain?
These things, it's, as I said, it's a woven fabric, so sunlight gets in, rain gets to penetrate through, and actually what will happen, I used this last year over some green beans, as they grow, it will just sort of puff up. The plants have plenty of room to grow, and you don't weight it down real heavy. Just weight it down with some light rocks like Henry and I just did, and then as it grows, it'll start to puff up. And the only time you really, really have to take it off is when the pumpkins bloom, because then you do want the bees to get in there. You want to take it off during the day so that the bees can get in there and pollinate the plants. Then you can just put it right back on, and it'll keep on growing, and then at some point you can just take it off, and the plants are nice and healthy, and they're not going to get attacked by bugs.
All right, now, prevention of pests is probably obviously the best route to go, but what if you already have insects or slugs or worms or whatever?
Yeah, they're pretty tricky. They come pretty quick. Another product that's on the market that's widely available now is diatomaceous earth. And this is really for insect crawling insects like ants and roaches and slugs. People get a lot of slugs in their garden. This is something that really helps stop them because it's ground up ancient fossils. And to them, it's razor blades. They hate to crawl over it. Soft-bellied creatures hate to crawl over this stuff. And so they'll vacate. Just the other day, I put some down on an anthill, an extremely active anthill, and they left. They were gone immediately. But of course, there's nothing toxic about it, so there's no damage to you or wildlife or any beneficial insects that are around in the area.
Well, it seems you've got a good arsenal for keeping out and preventing your pests in your garden. Once again, back to work, Larry.
Yep, thanks a lot, and we'll be looking into something else next time.
Take care.
Larry Somke, the environmental gardener, author of Beautiful Easy Gardens. Somke keeps his fossil dust in the garden shed at his home in Hollowville, New York. This is Bruce Robertson. In Minnesota, school children from all over the state recently gathered at the Minnesota Zoo for the second annual Kids Earth Summit. Young people focused on world environmental issues and ways to protect and conserve the Earth's resources. Also attending the event was Minnesota's Senator Paul Wellstone. From Minneapolis, Lee Jackson filed this report.
What do you do to help protect the environment?
Nope.
You don't? Are you going to start trying to protect the environment?
Yeah.
You know what the environment is?
Mm-mm.
Although 5-year-old Jordan wasn't quite sure what the fuss was all about, most who attended the second annual Kids Earth Summit knew exactly why they were there, to help save the Earth. Senator Paul Wellstone, introduced as an EIP, or Environmentally Important Person, praised students' efforts. He said their concerns haven't gone unnoticed, all the way to the White House.
The Vice President said to me, he said, "I remember, Paul, when you were at the Earth Summit in Rio, you had a suitcase from Kids for Saving Earth. You had a suitcase of dreams." He said, "You keep coming up with all these great ideas." And I said to him, "Mr. Vice President, these great ideas don't come from me. They come from young people in Minnesota, because the young people in Minnesota, the kids, they care about the environment, and all of us are going to make sure that we protect the environment. Do you agree?"
Young people said current efforts to make the Earth cleaner and greener aren't enough. Zach Arata, an 8th grade student, says instead of just talking about the Earth's problems, people need to really commit themselves to finding solutions.
Before putting your all into saving the ozone layer and the oceans and the soil, and it's just got to be a thing that you can't be taught it. You can be, but it doesn't have as much go in you. You got to be born with it.
10-year-old Alicia, on the other hand, knows exactly what kind of world she wants to grow up in. She's taking matters into her own hands to make the Earth a greener place for everyone.
I plant trees in my backyard, and we go out in the woods, and we find plants and flowers and stuff, and we water them so they grow.
Just about everyone came away from the second annual Kids Earth Summit with something to think about, from how the Madagascar hissing cockroach helps produce oxygen to better ways to recycle everyday household items. Wellstone left with another so-called bag of dreams, student letters addressed to President Clinton, urging him to work extra hard toward making the world a better place for all children.
With each other to use our
Lee Jackson reporting from Minneapolis. Well, that's our report on The Environment Show this week. We hope you'll join us next week at this same time. The Environment Show is a program about the environment, the air, water, soil, wildlife, and people of our common habitat. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-767-1929. Ask for The Environment Show, program number 183. The Environment Show is a presentation of National Productions, solely responsible for its content. Dr. Alan Chartok, executive producer. This is Bruce Robertson. The Environment Show is made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York and by Hemmings Motor News, the national Bible of the old car hobby, monthly from Bennington, Vermont.